Welcome to Tennessee Week on the Savage Pads podcast. I'm your host, Doug Battle, and former first-team All-SEC kicker Marshall Morgan is joining us to discuss his game-winning field goal against Tennessee a few years back, his relationship with Rodrigo Blankenship, and what sets Rodrigo apart as both a player and a person. Then Corey Amick returns for Savage Pads Savagery, where he gives a brief, not-so-serious segment previewing Georgia, Tennessee. And in the show's final segment, Caleb Gwynn returns to break down the Notre Dame game in depth, make show picks for a solid upcoming week of college football, and look ahead to UGA's second road test in the SEC East. This is the Savage Pads podcast. We've got a great show coming up. Stay tuned.
Practice every day.
Man, oh man, mano a mano.
He definitely 6 hour mods, me and myself, as close as we have right now to rope on.
When we score, I honestly did not know where I was for about 5 seconds.
Early on, you could see with Jake, you know, just like with Fran talking to him.
Maybe one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the country.
And we got to keep feeding the running back.
I don't think we've yet to see the tight ends.
I think Georgia does a great job bringing pressure on third down.
Turn around 2 weeks later in the SEC championship, we look like a completely different team, and we made them look like a completely different team.
I mean, it's hard to get emotional thinking about it.
And it was my job to kind of get outside the corner. And
as soon as I let it go, I knew it was good.
From that point on, I kind of began to trust of Aaron Murray as my quarterback.
The kid was just special.
I was famous. He was onside.
Everybody respects his specs.
That's what every Georgia fan should hinge their hopes on.
Alabama and Georgia are the best two teams in the country.
I feel like we are the true running back you.
I have great confidence that we're going to see the personification of Georgia football.
Welcome to the Savage Pads podcast. Former UGA kicker Marshall Morgan is with us. Marshall, thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yes, it is so good to have you back. And well, first question, were you able to attend the Notre Dame game?
I was not able to attend. I had a bunch of family and friends over the house, and you know, as much as I, you know, say I didn't want to leave them, you know, I kind of did to go to the game, just to, you know, that's once in a lifetime opportunity.
Right.
Or bring them with me, but we'd have to get everyone tickets.
Right. I gotcha. Wow. It was crazy, though. It was probably...
Oh, we were watching the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, it was probably the best atmosphere I've seen in Athens. I can't think of another game. I think the closest game I can think of was the LSU game. That crowd was pretty awesome.
Yeah. LSU at home?
Yes.
So the one that at home that I remember was my sophomore year when OBJ was still playing. And
yes.
Yeah, no, that was awesome. That whole year was kind of, you know, that and the Tennessee game. And
right.
I mean, there was a few of them.
Yeah. And you mentioned that Tennessee game. Neyland's one of the loudest stadiums I've ever been in. And as we all know, one of the years at Tennessee, you made a 56-yarder. As well as the crowd-silencing, game-winning 42-yard field goal in overtime. As a kicker, how are you able to mentally drown out that noise and execute your job in such a hostile environment?
So, I mean, that's kind of what you – well, first of all, let me say, mm-hmm. kickers, you know, are special people. I mean, some say that might mean we're different or whatever, but we're kind of like a different breed. You know, we're able to kind of zone out everything. It's just you, the snapper, the holder, the ball, the field goal. You know, it's you try to, you know, zone out all the fans, the coaches, the noise, everything. And I mean, once you get to that, it's just like, you know, you're at practice like you do every day, just you, your snapper and holder, and you're just kicking it through.
Yeah. So did you ever feel like the crowd affected you as a kicker, or did it always kind of just feel like practice to you?
So I mean, as much as I like to say, try to make it feel like practice, it never really did. You know, you do feel it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But especially there, like you said, it's one of the loudest stadiums, and, you know, it was even more of a nerve-wracking game because I knew, I grew up with Michael Pilardi, who was their kicker and punter at the time, and our special teams coach from back in South Florida was attending the game too. So it was like, even a bigger stage at that point. But Yeah, I mean, that first, the long kick that you mentioned, that was like, I want to say it was the first drive of the game, offensive drive. And so I didn't really have time to even think, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't remember that game, and it's because I was in high school at the time, and I was a big fan. I'd been going to a lot of games, but I was driving to prom, and
nice.
So homecoming, homecoming dance, and I was driving my girlfriend at the time, and we had it on the radio. It's the only Georgia game I've ever listened to on the radio in my life. And I, being the superstitious fan that I am, wore my number 16 Georgia jersey over my like over my tie and under my jacket. I didn't actually wear that to the dance, but while I was driving, because Georgia always won when I wore it, and I was really, really nervous about that. And so I remember listening, and I had it on, and I was like, "We're good. Marshall's gonna hit it at the end of the game." And you made the kick, and I took off my jersey and, you know, went to the homecoming dance and had a good time.
Oh, I appreciate the support. That's awesome.
Yeah, but anyway, that explains why I really, like, have a hard time remembering specifics with that game, because I didn't actually see it.
Yeah, that was actually the game. If I mean, I have trouble, trust me, they kind of all blend together too, mm-hmm. but I know that one in particular. I want to say it was the game after – the LSU game. I think it was directly after, like, the next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I remember it was like bang, bang, like two crazy game weeks in a row.
Yeah. You were just crushing like 50 plus yard field goals every week at that point. Yeah. That sophomore year was.
I shocked myself, to be honest. But that was my sophomore year. So that would have been 2013 season.
Yeah. Well, one guy Dog fans will love to see have equal success in Tennessee, not necessarily in the same fashion. We don't want it to be a close game, but would love to see our guy Rodrigo continue to ball out there. And just named SEC Special Teams Player of the Week for the second of 4 weeks so far this season, which is pretty impressive. But
wow. He deserves it.
Yeah, he does. And do y'all stay in touch, you and Rodrigo? I know there was a little overlap with y'all at Georgia.
Oh, yeah. So if I would say I talk to him at least twice a month, you know, just see how he's doing, how he's feeling. And as a kicker, I know that everyone outside of football, just all they want to talk about is football. So, you know, I just kind of check in on him, see how he's doing with school and just life in general.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually try to be the guy that talks about something other than football, but we're on like a football podcast. So sorry, Marshall, we got to talk football.
Totally understand.
Yeah. Yeah, but any other like place I would see you, I would just talk about anything but football. But here it's just like, it's football. Football show. That's what the fans want.
Yeah, you can't get away from it here. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, can you kind of give listeners an idea for what Rodrigo's like? He's kind of a mystery to everyone, and that's part of the legend, so don't say too much. But I'm personally a little curious as to what he's like to someone that knows him a little bit.
So, I mean, I do know exactly what he's like, and he's incredible. I mean, I would say, so at first, kind of cool, calm, quiet, collective,
mm-hmm.
But, like, really just cool. Like, he's, I don't know if you know, but, you know, he's got a rap song called, I think it's called Blanco, or it's on SoundCloud. I know that.
Yeah.
Free advertisement right here, you know. And then he's also, he raps. He's got Respect the Specs. He's got all kinds of, I mean, once he graduates, he's going to have so many trademarks and, like, marketing. I mean, I think his major is, like, digital broadcasting or something. So, I mean, he's doing a heck of a job already. But the NCAA kind of limits to what you can do. And
right, we've seen that with a lot of players, but I definitely feel like he's gonna, of all the kickers that have played at Georgia, he's gonna best be able to capitalize on it after college.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'll be the first one to buy a shirt.
Dude, you should have definitely worn some goggles when you were playing.
I know. I mean, I wish I could have. I mean, it's funny, he let me try his on at not during practice, but like we're in the locker room, and I mean, I may have to get a different prescription for my eyes, but I mean, I do respect the specs after that.
I think if Georgia wins the national championship on a Rodrigo Blankenship kick, I'm going to get a pair of Specs and just wear them like year round.
Oh, absolutely.
I think every Georgia fan should do that. Just have a whole fan hood, like hundreds of thousands of people all over the country wearing Specs, out of respect for the Specs.
That would be incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. But anyway, Rodrigo's a legend, and people kind of forget that at one point he was viewed as a weakness for really the bulk of his freshman season. Even going into his sophomore season, Georgia brought in another kicker, gave him a scholarship. And a lot of people were nervous about the kicking position when Rodrigo took over as starter and when he cemented himself as starter. In your opinion, what did Rodrigo lack then, and how has he transformed into arguably the best kicker in the country?
I don't think it's arguable. I think he is the best kicker in the country. I mean, the stats show it. He's incredible. Mm-hmm. But I think just coming in as a freshman or redshirt freshman, whatever it may be, it's really just a mental development. I mean, even in high school, I helped do the Mark Richt football camp or whatever, and I saw him out there kicking, and I mean, he's just crushing it. I mean, he's a special guy. But once you get that mental aspect and you get to college and you realize how to manage your classes with your football and your friends and family, then, you know, that changes everything. So that's why you see a lot of guys kind of really come alive sophomore year and on, because they finally get it figured out.
Right. And we saw that with you, saw that with Rod. Another player Georgia fans would love to see that from is the punter, Jake Marta, who has really struggled to start a sophomore campaign, at least in that Notre Dame game. And I know you're not a punter. Mm-hmm. I know there's a difference. But punters and kickers do have the same mental and physical hurdles to overcome during slumps. During the few times that you were in a funk throughout your college career, how were you able to put the past behind you and play to your potential?
I mean, you gotta stick to your guns, mm-hmm. you know. It's something you do every day. I mean, you know how to do it. You just got to kind of, I mean, try not to think about it too much. Really, really the thing that I would say hurts a lot of people is if, say, you're in a slump and like other teammates are being negative, that kind of puts you down even more. But, you know, I was on such an awesome team and awesome coaches that they just kept picking me up, like Coach Rick, Coach Lilly. I mean, for example, the Missouri game my senior year, I go, we kicked a few field goals that game, but I know I missed a short one. I think it was in the second half for sure. Anyways, I missed a short one, and then it came up to the game winner, and Coach Rick, I thought he was going to be like, you know, don't think about the last one or bring it up. But instead he goes, whether you make this or miss this, he goes, I love you. And that just like made my night. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go out there and make this.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. It does seem like, that kind of brings up the whole Alabama kicker mystery, where they always recruit these top kickers and they always underperform. They're missing extra points. They're missing field goals. It does seem like there's a mental aspect where being on a team that has a certain kind of vibe to it, a certain chemistry and certain positivity to it, is beneficial to a kicker. And you were certainly a beneficiary of that under Coach Richt. And with this Georgia team, while Kirby Smart's often compared to a Nick Saban, he does have a different side to him that probably benefits the kicking game, and hopefully the punting game, and just the mental aspect of football for Jake Camarda. But there have been fans saying they want to see Rodrigo go in as a punter. How plausible does that sound to you as a former kicker?
So I personally don't know. I mean, I've seen him kickers and punters and long snappers, you know, we at practice, you can only kick for so long. Right. So, you know, you'll punt some balls back if someone else is kicking or vice versa. And so, I mean, I've seen him hit a few bombs, but, you know, that'd be a better question for Rodrigo. I don't know how he would feel doing it, or if he's punted lately or what.
To me, it doesn't seem like the most plausible solution to the problem, but we do have to find a way to maximize Rodrigo's final year in Athens. Every offensive coach ever will tell you that you've got to get the ball in the hands of your best players. And Rodrigo's at least one of our favorite players. whether he's one of the best players out of the ball in his hands is a different question. But last year he got the ball on a direct snap at LSU that went wrong, and also attempted a pass against Auburn, which would have caused Sanford Stadium to explode had it worked. What kind of play do you think is going to finally get Rodrigo into the end zone this year?
I mean, as much as I'd like to see him, you know, do the play that we did, the little Adam Erickson flip over the head or shoulder.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Pop it over.
That was amazing.
Yeah, but, you know, I didn't get it into the end zone. They had a speedy guy that I guess picked up on it, and he caught me at like 4.
He got lucky.
But, yeah, and I replay that every morning. I get up, and I'm like, dang, I should have died. But, hey, I'll take what I can get.
Yeah.
But I think Rodrigo, you know, I don't want to give the play away by any means, but I think it's going to be some kind of pass. He's got a good arm on him.
All right. You heard it here first, folks. But not opponents. Opponents did not hear it. They do not listen to this podcast, so it's still a secret. And Rodrigo's got a cannon, though. Well, are you aware of the records you hold that Hot Rod hasn't broken yet? You keep up with that?
I do. So someone mentioned to me the consecutive field goal streak record.
Right.
And I know he's probably got to be approaching it.
Yeah, I think yours is 20. I have no idea what he's at with that right now. But you also have the most PATs in a career.
Wow.
And he's coming up on that one. So I don't know. Maybe you should like pull for him to come up one short so you can just stay the GOAT.
Hey, I hope that he breaks every record. You know, I want that kid to succeed, but I'm just happy to be up there in the leaderboard. So, I hope he beats all my records, and that means that he's doing great, which means George is doing great, and hopefully we'll win a national championship.
Yeah, that's what we all want to see. And I've always felt like the day that we do, they need to, like, go back and give rings to 2012 team, and I don't know. It feels like there's sort of a foundation that's set, and it just kind of builds, like Roquan and that 2017-2018 team. But that's just my personal thing. But I'm sure for you it feels like you're part of it.
Hey, I'm with you there.
Yeah, yeah. Get Marshall a ring. That's what I'm saying.
I wouldn't turn down a ring.
Yeah, we gotta get that championship first. But we'll see what we can do. I think I need a ring also because I've been through a lot of emotional distress over the years through Georgia football.
Yeah, and you had to wear your jersey at homecoming.
Yeah,
I had to do that.
I had to paint up for a lot of games. I had to try not to cry after several games in public while I was painted up. And it's a real challenge for a young man. So, all right, Marshall, well, really appreciate you coming on the show. And we'll be looking forward to getting those rings for both of us after this season, hopefully, when we get a championship.
I appreciate you having me on the show. Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs. I'll be a dog till I die. And now, recurring guest, former Tennessee fan and deadpan college football analyst Corey Amick rejoins the show to break down Georgia's upcoming matchup with Tennessee. Corey, I hope you enjoyed your bye week. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Doug.
Yeah, man. Well, as you know, Georgia has a big SEC East showdown with the team that you grew up rooting for, and Tennessee's off to a disappointing 1-3 start. But Kirby Smart recently said that this Tennessee team is, quote, on the brink of something special. What is Coach Smart alluding to here?
He's referring to the special thing being their first 1-11 season they've ever had.
Okay.
So I think you look at their schedule, and realistically, their next really 3 or 4 games, they won't win a single one. And then to end the season, they have games like Vanderbilt and Kentucky, who also look very bad this year. But I feel like if they're 1-7 going into some of those games, that they probably could finish 1-11 just because they have, you know, no real reason to play.
Sure. And you got to remember, they've lost at home to Georgia State and BYU already this season. But Jeremy Pruitt has come out and said, this football team is 100 times greater than it was this time last year. How do you think Jeremy Pruitt was able to accomplish the feat of improving a team by 100 times and still lose more games than the team had lost in the previous season?
Dude, I literally don't know. Like, I tried to think of something funny to spin off of this.
Yeah.
But honestly, it's just a moronic statement. Like, you look at Garantano by the numbers. He has a QBR this year of 44.8, which is 94th in the FBS. That's only four places higher than Rutgers quarterback, who, if anyone remembers from last year, Arthur Sitkowski, or I think it's like Sitkowski or something like that, he had a game where he went 2 of 16 with four interceptions and a total yardage of 1 yard for the game. So the fact that Jared Garantano at this point in the season is in the same realm as the Rutgers quarterback shows that there's not a lot of improvement, as well as his completion percentage against top 25 teams in his career is 58%. So okay. I don't know if you can multiply 58 by some number to get 100 times better, but maybe that's what he's going for.
Right.
I think, you know, you look at the fact they have three rushing touchdowns on the season and the fact their offensive line has already allowed 8 sacks, a few of which resulting in fumbles. They've been outpossessed. They've been outgained every week with the exception of the Chattanooga game. So whatever numbers Jeremy is running, he's finding something that adds up to being improved 100 times. But I would say numbers never lie, so I would call his bluff on this one.
Yeah, yeah. Jeremy Pruitt has never seemed like a real analytics kind of guy. Anyway, there has been a quarterback battle as of late in Knoxville. You mentioned Jared Garantano, and Coach Pruitt says he's going to play the player who gives Tennessee the best shot at winning on Saturday. Corey, who is this player in your opinion?
So for me, being a former fan, knew all about, you know, the guys growing up and the mascot and Davy Crockett. So I'm going with Smokey the Dog, and here's why. Okay. Here's a little scouting report on Smokey. So people who don't know, he's a blue tick coon hound, beautiful dog, not as, you know, beautiful as Ugga, but it's sure. Season is the only little category. So blue ticks are speedy and compact nocturnal hunters. They are well-muscled, but sleek and racy, and never chunky or clumsy. Blue ticks have a tremendous prey drive. So I think there's not a single player on the Tennessee roster that fits this scouting report, let alone someone listed as a quarterback on the depth chart. So I feel like based off that description, I mean, you got to go with Smokey 10. I think you put him in there and see if he can create some chaos. You never know if him going to the bathroom on the field or something distracts our players just long enough to pick up a few yards. You know, I don't know. You never know what can happen. So I think yeah. with how dogs are being persecuted in college football right now, with the Mississippi State Bulldog being run over by that Auburn player last week, I think you got to, you know, yeah, you got to bounce back and, you know, show that dogs matter in this league and that they have an opportunity to play. So my vote's for Smokey 10 for sure.
Yeah. And worst case scenario with Smokey 10, you mentioned if he were to go to the bathroom on the field, I mean, these fans at Tennessee are used to watching crap on that field. And so it really would meet their expectations. Now, whoever plays quarterback for Tennessee, whether it's Smokey, whether it's one of the actual quarterbacks on the team, this player is going to be playing for former UGA offensive coordinator Jim Chaney. And much has been made about the fact that Jim Chaney is deeply familiar with Georgia's offensive system. And on the flip side, our coaching staff knows Jim Chaney's tendencies quite well. I mean, he's been with Georgia as long as Kirby Smart has up until this point. What do you think the Georgia defense needs to prepare for when it comes to facing a Jim Chaney offense?
Three things I would specifically watch for if I'm the defensive coordinator this week as far as like what I'm really going to hit on. Screen plays, pretty much any down, but specifically following either a sack or like a second and long due to like a false start or some sort of penalty that their offensive line's bound to get. Mm-hmm. I think that's like for sure going to happen. Another big one I would watch out for, jet sweeps on fourth and short.
Yes.
Even if we're talking like fourth and inches and all the quarterback has to do is fall forward, I still think he's going to swing it outside and try to get the edge, which just won't happen.
Yeah, that's a Jim Chaney staple. We've seen that this year. We've seen it pretty much every year at Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, if there was a fifth down, he would run that play on fifth down.
Right. I actually think he runs it thinking that there is a fifth down, and he's like, oh, if we don't get it on this down with this cool, tricky play that I came up with, then we can just run it and get that yard. And then he finds out afterwards that there's not a fifth down, and that he just did a jet sweep to Isaiah McKenzie on fourth down.
Yeah, I feel like he calls plays like when you play, you know, RIP NCAA football, but Madden now.
RIP.
when there's three suggested plays and you can actually scroll left and right out of those pages, but he just stays on that front page of the main three suggestions based on any down.
Yes.
And then he just presses like right trigger or R2 to flip the play to one side or the other. And so I think that's how he has six plays.
Right. Yeah. My favorite Jim Chaney goal line play, and this is a little off script here, but it came to me that Jim Chaney against Auburn at home in a tight ball game had five-star quarterback Jacob Eason and five-star athlete Terry Godwin. And you would think that we would do the five-star quarterback throwing it to the five-star athlete / receiver and Terry Godwin. But he actually wanted to trick the Tiger defense, and he had Terry Godwin throw it to Jacob Eason, neutralizing each player from their skill sets and ultimately leading to a turnover on downs, I believe. Also saw a Terry Godwin interception, I believe, in that same game against Auburn, trying to throw the ball into the end zone. So I would look out for Tennessee taking their players that are specifically skilled in one area and actually flipping them with the players that aren't skilled in that area to throw the defense off.
Yeah, maybe they look at, you know, playing some of their defensive backs at wide receivers so they have a better chance at batting down Jared Garantano's really bad passes.
Yeah. You know, that's what you call playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers on the red and black checkerboard that will be Neyland Stadium.
Yes. Okay, my last one that I think Chaney's probably going to pull out is, you know, we brought this up a few weeks ago, but players being their own blockers. I think, you know, Pruitt sent that message, and it'll be interesting to see how Georgia's defense reacts to the ball carrier setting his own blocks. So, you know, whether that's some equipment they use or – you know, I don't know. However Tennessee comes up with it, I think that'll probably be the toughest task for the Dogs to defend. It's just, you know, also being a blocker. They'll have to figure out who's who. Who knows?
Yeah. Corey, last question. Jeremy Pruitt took a lot of heat. I mean, a lot of heat for comparing the Tennessee football program to the Titanic earlier this season. And I get it. There's Garantano instead of DiCaprio. There's Rocky Top instead of that Titanic song that goes well with every sports moment. It's simply an unfair comparison for the film and honestly an insult to its makers. Now, as a movie buff, what film do you think better parallels this Tennessee football program?
Oh, man. All right. I've limited down to three of the movies I feel like best illustrate not only the program, but, you know, the fan base as well and everyone involved. So the first one, Facing the Giants. So Tennessee is like the agnostic team that gets beat by the undersized, less talented Christian team. So like you don't hear anything about them, and the story is not about them, but they lose. And that's pretty much their only role in the movie. So I feel like that fits Tennessee pretty well.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
You know, they definitely wouldn't have a guy like Brock that's, you know, doing the bear crawl with a guy on his back for 100 yards. Like, no way a guy like Brock's on Tennessee.
Yeah.
But they do play, I guess, the villain in that movie.
Sure.
So that's my first one. Let's see. I'm trying to decide which order I want to do these based on how strongly I feel. I'll go with – okay, so second one is 22 Jump Street. So Tennessee is Schmidt, and their fan base is Captain Dixon. So Schmidt being Jonah Hill, Captain Dixon being Ice Cube.
Right.
So basically their whole season is when Ice Cube goes – bananas at the family buffet right after he's found out that Jonah Hill is dating his daughter. So the team is Jonah Hill and the fan base is Ice Cube. And so every time they come out onto the field, they just have a bunch of fans that treat them like Ice Cube treats Jonah Hill when he's just absolutely disturbed that that man's dating his daughter.
Yeah.
So last one, I feel like this one really, really hits home for the players, the fans, and just in college football in general.
Okay.
Is the original Avengers. So Tennessee playing their entire SEC schedule is like when Loki tries to tell the Hulk to stop and then he gets absolutely just like beaten into the ground. I feel like
that.
Tennessee is Loki being like, hey, stop this. And then the Hulk is every other SEC team that just takes them and just ragdolls them around into the ground, ultimately resulting in their 1-11 season. So I feel like if I'm a Tennessee fan, I'm going to watch the Avengers just to really prepare me for what's coming the rest of the season.
Yeah. And I think Jeremy Pruitt's on the verge of getting Thanos snapped.
Yes, and it will cost him everything.
On that note, Corey, thank you for joining us. It was a pleasure as always. Go Dawgs.
Yeah, thanks, Doug. Go Dawgs.
All right, and now my good friend and our expert analyst, Caleb Gwynn, returns to the show. Caleb, welcome back.
How's it going? How's it going? Exciting week.
Dude, it is good, man. Part of me wants to just dive in and tell you all about what it was like being in the stadium, but we'll get to that shortly. Let's talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. Caleb, what was good that you saw on Saturday?
There was a lot of good things. Really just the leaders of the offense with Fromm and Swift, just the sound play, reliability. Fromm was, you know, never really phased. You have confidence in him. And then Swift, he definitely does what he needs to do. He hasn't had those crazy stats like a lot of people predicted, but he's done what he's needed to do. And I just have a confidence in those two that they'll do what they need to do here in the future from watching that game.
Yeah. Jake Fromm absolutely delivered. Just phenomenal. And it's gotten where we take it for granted, like where we give out our little game awards and we just expect him to have a nearly perfect night passing the ball. If he's the most valuable player on this offense, I mean, if he goes down, we are a much, much lesser team. And got to give credit where credit is due with Jake Fromm. Lawrence Cager stepped up, and I liked seeing that that guy can catch. We've heard from some Miami fans, maybe some salty Miami fans, that Lawrence Cager doesn't have hands. He seemed to have hands on Saturday. Defensive side of the ball, a lot of playmaking. Devon Wilson making plays. J.R. Reed, my guy. J.R. Reed's another one that we take for granted, I think, because he's been around for so long. And that dude, I saw a mock draft where it had him going in the first round. It's just like he's kind of sneaking up on us. And it's like, holy cow, we've got this great safety that we didn't realize we had just because we've been watching him for so long. And you start to take him for granted. But I've gotten where JR is one of my favorite players to watch. Also, that dude has some next level swagger with the celebrations. Other good stuff that I saw, well, the atmosphere, Caleb, I'm sure you heard about it. It was unreal. I mean, Sanford Stadium has never been crazier. I can't imagine being a recruit and going to that game and not deciding to go to Georgia. I mean, it felt like you would have to be crazy to walk away from that and want to go anywhere else. The lighting was incredible. The whole light show, the introduction, the players running on the field, the fourth quarter, the crowd noise causing like a billion penalties. It was and causing Notre Dame to use timeouts. It was just absolutely unbelievable game experience as a fan. Our run defense, also something that I feel that we take for granted because we haven't had the frustration of giving up a lot of rushing yards, gave up 42 yards rushing to Notre Dame. That's a plus. And the last good I saw was that, while it may have been disappointing to many Dog fans that we didn't just come out and wipe the floor with Notre Dame, I think that it's really important for your team to overcome some adversity in the regular season. And for Georgia to get to do it this early in the season really bodes well for the rest of the season because we've got Florida, we've got Auburn, we've got hopefully Alabama, and of course, hopefully the college football playoff. And in those games, you can either get scared when the game gets close and the game's on the line and because you've never been there before, or it's like, this is what we do. We win these games. We win these games in the fourth quarter. And Georgia's got that experience of being tested and being behind, having to come back, doing it, overcoming it, and having a championship air about you. And for me, that is such a good thing to see this early in the season. Now, as far as what's not so good, Caleb, what concerns did you have based on this game?
Yeah, I mean, I was going back and forth on the bad and the ugly part, and I guess I can kind of combine them because it's the glaring part was the special teams. You know, Tyler Simmons fumbling that punt. I mean, those are the kind of plays that will lose us SEC championship games you know, things like that. So kind of piggybacking off what you were saying, it's not that I'm glad we had that mistake, but I'm glad that we can overcome something as big as that. But yeah, I like what you said. Like we need to face adversity. It's nice to do that in early season. So that would be the ugly part, the special teams and the fumble. And the good part is that we came back and we fought through that. So
yeah. This one I have under bad, maybe not ugly, but Tyler Simmons did drop a touchdown. It was a tough grab, but it's also a grab that pretty much any receiver for Alabama or Clemson would have made. And it was probably the best throw Jake Fromm's ever thrown. On the run, under pressure, getting hit, threw the ball to where only the receiver could get it in the back of the end zone. And Tyler Simmons just wasn't able to hold on to it. To me, that's something where you give that ball to a George Pickens, I don't see it going through his hands. Something else bad that I saw, the last play of the game, we got the pass rush on Notre Dame's quarterback, and the ball was thrown up in the air, and the ball was batted down, praise the Lord, because number 10 for Notre Dame was streaking down the field. When Ian Book extended that play, number 10 was wide open, and most of the people up were, because I was sitting pretty high, and you could see a good view of the full field, and we all saw it, and everyone was so anxious. I have a video, and all these people are just screaming, because we all have PTSD from Georgia, Tennessee, 2nd and 26. I mean, so many plays like that. If Ian Book had the time, which thankfully he didn't because we blitzed and our pass rush did a great job, but if he had the time to scan the field, he would have seen number 10 streaking across the field open with nothing but green grass in front of him, and would have been another traumatic ending to a Georgia football game. Ooh, sigh of relief there, but we cannot afford to have that kind of breakdown in those situations. Outside of that, one other complaint I've seen among a lot of fans and heard among a lot of fans is just a failure of getting the ball to our playmakers. James Cook and George Pickens are two in particular that Kirby Smart noted did not see the ball as much as they should for the caliber of players that they are. So ugly, you mentioned the muffed punt. I would say Jake Camarda's punting. I'd throw that in there too. And last thing to me that's ugly is the inability to get a first down to seal the game at the end. Same situation as the SEC championship last year where we need a first down. If we do, we can likely run out the clock and win the game. And we just get real conservative in those situations. And you understand because they want to run clock, but it's also like we need to get a first down. And Tim Tebow was critical of Georgia for this, saying instead of opening it up and going for the win, they knew they were the better team, played conservative. So I was very unimpressed with Georgia. If they want to win the title this year, they're going to have to spread it out and be more aggressive and go for broke rather than understanding that they have a talented team and playing conservative. Those are Tim Tebow's words again, not mine. But I do think he has a legitimate point, though he is a Florida Gator, in saying that Georgia's got to keep the foot on the gas and kill the team. I mean, when you're ahead, take advantage of what you're doing and what's working and continue to do it. And don't give them the opportunity to come back and win on a play with a blown coverage at the end like Notre Dame almost did.
I agree. I still feel like we're just holding so much back. I just think we have so much talent that we can utilize that we have yet to utilize well.
Yeah, and this was a learning game for Georgia in that we walked away from the game kind of with a wake-up call offensively. But to come out of that kind of game with a win is not something that we've done in recent years. Now, our last Notre Dame game, we certainly had that experience, and after that we opened up the offense and got on a roll. But, you know, the Auburn game that we lost was a wake-up call and paid off for us down the line. But we did take a loss that game, and it did hurt our playoff chances. And again, last year with the LSU game, which ultimately kept us out of the playoff, that was kind of our learning game last year. So hopefully this year this will be it. This will be where Georgia looks at the film and says, okay, we need to be more aggressive. We need to turn the play around without ever taking a loss. That's my hope for the Dogs. We need to move forward to the Smash Mouth All-Star of the Week. Caleb, who was the player that embodied Kirby Smart's credo of composure, physicality, and toughness?
It's Cager. Such an amazing job. When he came over from Miami, it's not like I was skeptical, but I just, you know, I was just wondering how he would do in an SEC offense and that big body. Is he just a big guy, tall, and just has the physical traits, but he doesn't really have the know-how and the offense? But he really shined. Anything that was in the vicinity of his way, he would definitely pull it down. And I just have a ton of confidence going forward on what we can do in the red zone, what we can do, you know, anywhere with him and Jake Fromm throwing the ball. So I really like him as that kind of MVP.
Yeah. Stat line for him, 5 receptions, 82 yards, 1 touchdown. May not seem like a phenomenal game to most, but if you watch that game, you saw how clutch Lawrence Cager was. Game of his life, made him worth the scholarship regardless of his performance the rest of the year. I mean, if he doesn't play another game for Georgia, it was worth bringing him on just for that one game. And I'm like you, and I'll say it, I was a little skeptical about Lawrence Cager because of what I had heard about his hands. He certainly silenced the haters on Saturday, was clutch. Another thing about Lawrence that isn't mentioned often is blocking. I've seen some really excellent blocking from him. He's shown a commitment to it. He's got a huge body, great frame for blocking, and helped open up the run game as well. Savage Pads Player of the Week. This is the player on defense that most deserves the Savage Pads after the game. Caleb, who is the Savage Pads Player of the Week?
I went with one of the guys who got an interception in J.R. Reed, and we were talking about him earlier, how he's just come on as an unbelievably reliable safety. And I'd also like to mention just the amazing recruiting that we've done, because he was a transfer from, I think it was at Tulsa.
That's right.
And I mean, the two main players that we're talking about right now is Cager from Miami and J.R. Reed from Tulsa. And the fact that these guys are doing so amazing, coming from other schools, like we can do great recruiting, you know, out of high school, but we also can see the talent in other players that, you know, might not be, you know, top of the recruiting race, but we see potential. And that's just such a cool thing that our coaching staff has done such a good job at. But I guess back to J.R. Reed, he's so reliable, and he is kind of that guy that we take for granted, I guess, sometimes. He's just a ball hawk. I mean, he's there in every play. It's not just the interception. I mean, he's there breaking up passes, big-time tackles. I mean, he's the real deal, and really thankful to have him kind of as the leader of the defense back there.
Yeah, J.R. Reed is a perfect example of why we should trust the coaching staff with personnel decisions, because when they brought him on, most people thought it was to get his cousin, who has since been kicked off the team, as a recruit who was in high school at the time, now plays for Tennessee. But I think J.R. Reed is the Savage Pads Player of the Week as well. I do want to give a shout-out, honorable mention, Devod Wilson, numero uno. Dude made plays left and right, was all over the field on Saturday, and was one of the most valuable players in that game. He's a guy that's a redshirt freshman coming off an ACL injury. Looks like he has a very bright future in Athens. Now, we want to move forward to a new award we're giving out. We've realized that we feel like the other awards we do incentivize the players to play well, and we want to incentivize people on the special teams as well, because the special teams has not been as pretty as we would like for it to be. So this is the special teams player that didn't suck. Caleb, who do you have?
This one's easy this week. We're going to go with old Rod.
Rodrigo.
He's just another guy that's just extremely reliable. And he's not a guy that we really take for granted, because, you know, we all love Rodrigo.
Right.
But, I mean, he scored pretty much half the points last week or 2 weeks ago. I mean, he puts this team at such an advantage to where we can get to play a different style of football, you know, in big games, to where you can trust that he's going to hit the big one, the long one. Yeah. He had a great game. Yeah, he's just extremely reliable, and I think he'll probably win that award that we just made up for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I hope he does. Although I would like to list multiple players for it one week. Yeah. We'll do that, players. If you're listening, we'll put all you guys on there. Just go out there and, you know, be great for us, for the dogs. But for real, Rodrigo is another one that I feel is taken for granted. And there are years as a Georgia fan where you kind of start to tell yourself, okay, maybe this isn't our year. We don't have the receivers that Alabama has. We don't have the defensive line that Clemson and Auburn have. We don't have the aggressive offense that LSU has. And you can start to talk yourself out of that season. And then the next year comes and you look back and you're like, oh my gosh, we had so-and-so and like now they're gone and now so-and-so's gone. And like that was our shot. And having a great kicker is very underrated. And especially come those late season games, playoff games, hopefully, Rodrigo can be a difference maker, and I do think he is a major reason why this year is a very opportune year for the University of Georgia, and I think he's one of the key advantages we have. Moving into the pick six segment, Caleb, I currently have 10 points on the season, and you have 8. The extra point last week went to me because our scores were one different, and I just had Georgia with one less point than you did. My score was still way off. I had 37-17. Final score was 23-17. Davin Bellamy, though, who came on the show, had us winning 24-17. So he's pretty much been dead on every time he's come on, and I'm starting to think he may have a future in the analyst profession if he so chooses to pursue that after his NFL career. But it's a new week. And it's a new pick six. First game we're starting with here is number 7 Auburn at number 10 Florida. Caleb, who do you have?
Well, bummer pick.
it's a lose-lose.
Yeah, it's a lose-lose. I feel like Auburn is the better team. I feel like, unfortunately, they're kind of starting to get a groove. And I think that Florida's not quite there yet. I think it's kind of disguised with wins, but I don't think Florida is the team that their record says. But I think Auburn is a team that will struggle with and later on in the season. Mm-hmm. So I think Auburn will take this one.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I'm in the same boat there. And I hope I'm wrong because I live in Alabama. And, you know, around you're starting to hear people use words like national championship, undefeated season. Remember last time we played Alabama and Georgia at home. All these things where Auburn people are really starting to believe. And as someone who has watched Auburn football my whole life, and anyone out there who has knows that the worst thing that can happen with Auburn is when they believe in themselves, because they can have bad teams that become way better than they are because they think they're better than they are. And it's a weird like psychological sports thing. But there needs to be some study on it because it is an absolute phenomena. Auburn is a cult, by the way, and they actually get some kind of supernatural power from believing in themselves when their fans start thinking national championship. And people are on the Gus bus. I mean, everyone I talk to around here, you ask them, you're on the Gus bus, and they're like, all aboard. It's scary. It's concerning, and it's certainly something to keep an eye on with Georgia having to play at Auburn later in the season. But I am going with Auburn there. Next game, number 25, Michigan State, coming off a 9-point win over Indiana. At number 4, Ohio State, who just absolutely crushed Nebraska on national television.
Yeah, Ohio State.
Yeah.
I think Ohio State's pretty legit.
Too legit.
Justin Fields is the guy that we wanted. Thought he was going to be and wanted. And, yeah, I think Ohio State's a really good team, and they'll probably do some big things. Their defense also is ridiculous with Chase Young and amazing recruiting, amazing talent.
Sure.
I think they'll pull this one out.
Yeah, I got Ohio State. I want to see them lose. I also feel like it's just destiny that we're going to play them in the playoff. Fields versus Fromm, a little rematch there, a little fun storyline for ESPN to talk about for a couple of weeks. But there's no getting around it. Justin Fields is a very skilled athlete, and as much as there's a crowd of Georgia fans that wants to see him fail, it's not going to happen at Ohio State, not in the regular season. He may struggle when he finally faces a legitimate defense, but the kid's got a cannon. He's fast. He's huge. He's accurate. There's nothing stopping him from succeeding in his conference, and I just can't. When you look at their schedule, I can't see Ohio State losing a game. I really can't. I mean, Wisconsin's their toughest one, and they just came out of a close one with Northwestern. So Ohio State, I almost have them as a shoe-in into the playoff, just like I do with Clemson. I actually, personal opinion, think there will be one SEC team in the playoff this year. I think Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Clemson are all just about guaranteed a spot because of how easy their schedules are. And they're good teams. I mean, Ohio State, if you look at recruiting, just watch them. If they pass the eye test, for certain. I mean, they look like they could play against Alabama. They look like they could play against anybody. I'm going with them against Michigan State. Next game, number 15, Washington at Stanford. Washington's coming off a 28-14 win over USC. Stanford is coming off a 31-28 win over Oregon State. Caleb, who's your pick?
Yeah, I'm going to ride with my guy, Eason, all season.
Just
rooting him on. But I do think Washington is a really good team. And Stanford is not necessarily that great of a team. So I'm going to go Washington.
Yep, I am also going Washington. Y'all know I'm a big Jacob Eason guy. Still kind of holding on to the hope, and I know people are going to shoot this down, and I know it's not realistic, but how crazy would it be if Fromm goes pro? Eason right now is not mocked to go in the first round, which is absurd because he's got all the tangibles and a lot of the intangibles, and he's got to develop some, but most years, if he didn't transfer, he would be going in the top 10, no doubt. What if Fromm leaves and things aren't working out at Washington as well as he wanted them to? He's not a Heisman candidate. I've seen some complaints about the offensive play calling at Washington. And what if Jacob Eason feels like his best opportunity to showcase his talents to become a top 10 pick is back at the University of Georgia, transfers back, fulfills the prophecy as the chosen one, and leads Georgia to a national championship?
Wow. I never even thought about that.
Yeah, people That's are going to get mad about that, and I get it. It's not going to happen. But you guys are no fun because it's fun to think about. I got Washington in this one. California at number 13, Oregon. Cal lost to number 20, Arizona State, last week by one touchdown. They also beat Washington earlier in the season, for what it's worth, which I'm still upset about because I wanted Washington to make the playoff. But anyway, Cal lost to number 20, Arizona State. Oregon's only loss was a six-point loss to Auburn, who turns out to maybe be really good. So they've since beaten Nevada, Montana, and Stanford by a combined 118 points. California at number 13, Oregon. Caleb, who's your pick?
I like Oregon. Beginning of the season, I picked them to be in the playoff. I don't think that will happen, but I do think they're still a really good team. I think they'll win that one.
Yeah, I got Oregon as well. Herbert's like a poor man's Jacob Eason, and which means he's really amazing. Oregon by, I don't know. I don't know what the margin's going to be like on that one. Cal's not bad. Number 14, Iowa at number 19, Michigan. Iowa is undefeated against a schedule almost as weak as Clemson's. Michigan got smacked by Wisconsin 2 weeks ago and nearly lost to Army 3 weeks ago, but they beat Rutgers 52-0 last week, so maybe they're back. I don't know. Iowa 14, Michigan 19. Who you got, Caleb?
I got Michigan. I think Harbaugh might be fighting for his life over there. Probably pull out a little upset there. So
yeah, wow. Well, it is at the big house, as the kids say. I'm going with Iowa. Honestly, have not watched them much. I like their Pittsburgh Steelers look, and I feel like it gives them like a NFL feel, which can be intimidating. I just don't think Michigan's good. Until proven otherwise, I'm going to pick Michigan to lose pretty much any game against a ranked team. Last one, quick one, Baylor at Kansas State. Baylor's undefeated, coming off a thrilling win over Iowa State, which I watched. And Kansas State just took their first L of the year to Oklahoma State, looking for a bounce back week. Baylor at Kansas State. Who do you have, Caleb?
Yeah, I think they'll do just that. I think they'll have that bounce back win. So I think, I think they'll pull that one out.
Okay, K-State. Yeah, that's what I got too. And the extra point. So we picked six, and now it's time for the extra point. right? Got to get that field goal. Rodrigo time. Put your goggles on, everyone. Number three, Georgia at Tennessee. Caleb, I'll let you go. I promise, man, if you have the same number as me, every week it feels like you're like 1 point off from me, and it stresses me out. I don't know. It makes it look like we planned it, which we didn't. Almost, you want to say it at the same time? Like, I'll count us down.
And yeah.
That way, if it's the same, it'll be weird. But it'll also be like, I didn't copy you.
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right. 1, 2, 3, 38-6.
42-13.
Okay, you didn't say it at the same time, but yeah. You said what? You said 42-13?
Yeah.
Okay. I said 38-6. Caleb said 42-13. I didn't ask Marshall the score, but he's a special teams guy. I feel like he would have picked like a multiple of three and just all field goals, like three times like 15, so like 45-9, and just like a bunch of Rodrigo field goals, and yeah, then three field goals for the other team. So I'm going to just chalk that in as his predicted score. If that's what it turns out to be, I will give Marshall – actually, I'm not gonna say that because that's like a real football score. 15 field goals for Rodrigo. Crazy prediction there, Marshall. But Georgia-Tennessee, Caleb, last thoughts before we wrap this show up.
I'm looking for us to show kind of a dominance, get back to showing that we are a top five team, top three team, and just kind of dominate Tennessee and really put them in the pit, put Pruitt in the pit, you know. Looking for Swift to kind of have his first real big statistical day, maybe 150 yards, two touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Really just controlling the game at the line of scrimmage. And also seeing some more of the young receivers start to get some chemistry going with Fromm and the younger receivers.
Yeah, I'm hoping that in the bye week we started working in some of our more talented but less experienced players and started seeing, you know, what they can really do, give them a real shot at playing, because every season, I mean, we start the season with, and I talked about this in week one, where we were going to see our more experienced, more dependable players early on, and usually the kind of breakout receivers over the course of the season come along. And we saw that with Javon Wims a few years ago, didn't even play to start the season and ended up being our number one receiver the next season. And J.J. Holloman last year, I mean, the year before, he really didn't play much, came on a little bit at the end, and then was our big guy last year. So I'm hoping to see more Pickens, more Blaylock. Kyrus Jackson's supposedly back, coming back off a broken hand. Don't know how active he'll be, but he's another guy I was excited about going into the season, and would love to see him get the ball some more. Defensively, I'm hopeful for a just completely dominant performance. Everything I've seen from Tennessee is bad, and Jim Chaney is their offensive coordinator, so it's a little personal on this one. You know, I honestly have watched them play, and I do not think they're as bad as everyone thinks. They've lost some bad games, yes. They have talent, yes. And there's no getting around the fact that Coach Pruitt is, if nothing else, a very good defensive coordinator, good defensive game planner, very aggressive coach. Coaches physicality. I mean, he coaches the exact same way as Nick Saban and Kirby Smart as far as what he preaches to his players every week. They know this Georgia staff. They know their tendencies. I mean, Pruitt's an Alabama guy. The same system as Kirby. Jim Chaney's over there. He knows our system. He knows our defense. There's just some weird things about like that coming out of a bye week. So part of me is, you know, it'd be a sigh of relief to see us go up a little bit and come out playing some good football. But fully expect us to do so at the same time. So really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, I'm excited. I completely forgot that Chaney's over there as offensive coordinator. Not like it was a bad exit for him, but still it'd be cool to show him what he's missing over here at Georgia, all the talent that we've got over here, make him miss it. So
yeah, and it's just it's less about him. He's a good person and have nothing against him personally. It's more about the Tennessee fans, and when they acquired him, they were bragging to Georgia fans about like stealing our offensive coordinator. He's the highest paid coordinator in the country. He's the best offensive coordinator in the country. He's the reason Georgia's had all this success. And Georgia fans feel like he's been holding us back from having more success because he's so conservative. Now, we haven't seen ourselves, step out of that conservatism. Political word there, kids. But at the same time, you kind of want to prove those Tennessee fans wrong. So it's more of a personal thing with them.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. But we got to wrap the show up here. Folks, if you're driving to the game, drive safe. Take over that stadium. Checker it red and black. You know, be classy just like we were to the Notre Dame fans. Have them write. I'm sure no Tennessee fan's going to write a open letter to Georgia fans in the red and black or whatever paper it was. But let's represent well, but let's also represent well. You know, like, let's show out. Let's take over that stadium. I'm not going to be there. Hit me up in the DMs on Twitter if you are going, because I actually got to sell some tickets here. I had a trip come up. But I do want to see Georgia fans all in that stadium, and I have a feeling they will do what they do. So those of our listeners who have shared the show with friends, really appreciate you doing that on social media. Those of you that aren't following us, it's at Savage Pads on Twitter and Instagram. That's at, in the words, Savage Pads. And that's the show for this week. I'm not yet sure about next week's show because I will be in Portland, Oregon, and I'll be working to put together something here to have some quality content for you all. Stay updated on that via our social media. Again, it's at Savage Pads. Thank you all for listening, and go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.